Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Well, the U.S. Supreme Court does it again to organize labor, this time affecting the International Brotherhood of Teamsters. And today on the show, we check in with the Florida Education Association and the Office of Professional Employees. That would be Local 39 in Madison, Wisconsin. Welcome to the Monday, June 5th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on at least six platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. We have two guests on the show today. We're going to start things off with Andrew Spahr. Andrew is president of the Florida Education Association, which is Florida's largest association of professional employees. They have about 150,000 members, members that are under attack in a variety of ways. But first, we're going to talk about how Florida lawmakers, at the governor's urging, Ron DeSantis, have passed multiple bills restricting what teachers can teach and what students can learn or even read. I mean, a single parent can complain about a book and that book would be taken off the shelves. That's how crazy it is in Florida. We'll talk about the attack on Disney, and this is all part of the Don't Say Gay law, and public sector workers. The governor came after public sector workers with a law that is pretty much intended to be a union killer. Now, we're talking all public employees except police, fire, corrections officers. As of the 1st of July, it will be illegal for union members to choose to have their dues deducted from paychecks. Local unions will be required to maintain 60% density. We'll get into all of this with Andrew Spahr as our first guest. It's a huge attack, and as a result, a lot of teachers are saying, you know what, I'm done. I'm out of here. And they have a teacher shortage in Florida, but that's a nationwide problem. Later in the show, we're going to go to Madison, Wisconsin, and join Catherine Bartlett Moldaville. She is the president and business manager of the Office of Professional Employees International Union 39, Local 39. OPEIU, by the way, is the first and largest labor union in the country dedicated to professional, technical, and office workers. And they have about 3,000 professional, technical, and clerical employees in the greater Madison, Wisconsin area. And they represent a lot of the office workers in a variety of unions, a lot of the trades, too. I'm looking at Iron Workers Local 383. The machinists, there's two, District 10 and Lodge 66, and credit unions, Madison Gas and Electric. She's going to talk about Community Mutual. They're going through a name change. They're now a CUNA Mutual Group, and apparently the workers there's over 400 that are on strike. And boy, I tell you, it's pretty nasty, up to 9 unfair labor practice charges. There's a new CEO, and apparently he's playing hardball with Local 39, the Office of Professional Employees International Union. So Catherine Bartlett Moldaville will be joining us as a second guest on the show. Now, a brief look into the world of labor. This segment brought to you by the good folks at Boyd Watterson Asset Management, offering fixed income real estate and equity investment options to clients nationwide. You can find more at boydwatterson.com. The wait for Glacier Northwest versus the Teamsters is over. In an opinion, it was 5-3-1. The Supreme Court on Friday, it came out with their decision, ruled that a concrete supplier may sue its employees in state court for foreseeable and imminent damage to property as a result of a strike. The strikers, Justice Barrett wrote, did not, quote, take reasonable precautions to mitigate the damage to the employer's property and conducted the strike in a way designed to destroy the concrete. Such activity, according to the court, is not protected under the National Labor Relations Act. Thus, the employer's tort suit in state court should have been allowed to go forward. There was a dissent, one of them. Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson criticized the court for engaging in what she called difficult line-drawing questions that Congress clearly intended for the NLRB to resolve. The majority, Justice Jackson wrote, did not give enough credence to the complaint issued by the board's general counsel against Glacier. In fact, I have the opinion in front of me, and I just want to read a brief part of it from Justice Jackson. The right to strike, she said, is fundamental to American labor law. Congress enshrined that right in the National Labor Relations Act and simultaneously established the National Labor Relations Board to adjudicate disputes that arise between workers and management. That decision reflected Congress's judgment that an agency with specialized expertise should develop and enforce national labor law in a uniform manner through case-by-case adjudication. Well, for its part, this court has scrupulously guarded the board's authority for more than a half a century. And she pointed out a case, the San Diego Building Trades Council versus Garmin. This is a case that goes back to 1959. Under Garmin and its relevance here, a court presented with a tort suit based on strike conduct generally must pause proceedings and permit the board to determine in the first instance whether the union's conduct is lawful if the conduct at issue is even arguably protected by the National Labor Relations Act. Well, today, the court faltered on this. So this was more or less expected. Again, the decision was a 5-3-1, the one from Ketanji Brown Jackson. But when you have a Republican majority on the court, you have a court that's not what you call union-friendly. There'll be more to come on this in shows to come. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Andrew Spahr, president of the Florida Education Association.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America. You can find more at CWA-union.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Auto Workers. Find more at UAW.org.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, where you can find more at teamster.org.
Buildings, bridges, skyscrapers, and more. Structures that are the face of our cities and towns were built by members of the Iron Workers Union. That's why it's important that our workforce of over 130,000 iron workers continues to be the safest and best trained in the field. With 154 training centers, we invest over $90 million annually in safety and training. We're growing the next generation of union iron workers. There are so many reasons to put your trust in our iron workers and their employers. Learn more about us at ironworkers.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. Real simple, AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the Ohio Federation of Teachers, where you can find more at oh.aft.org. Speaking of teachers, let's go down to the state of Florida right now and join Andrew Sparr. Andrew is head of the Florida Education Association, which, by the way, is the state's largest association of professional employees. We're talking about 150,000 members and growing. We'll talk about that. The statewide educator union represents pre-K through 12 teachers, education staff professionals, higher education faculty, graduate assistants, students at colleges and universities preparing to become teachers, as well as retired education employees. And that whole list there is all under attack by the governor of the state of Florida. Andrew Sparr, welcome back to America's Workforce. By the way, Andrew has been in the president's seat for the last 3 years, so you got the pandemic. You're dealing with the culture wars. I don't know how you're doing it, brother. Are you okay? Are you hanging in there okay?
I'm hanging in there, Flash, and thanks for having me today.
Oh, my gosh. I don't even know where to start today, but I guess we should talk about the number of bills here, not one, not two, several, that basically restrict what your teachers can teach and what students can learn or even read. Did this all start with the Don't Say Gay law? Is that was that the beginning of all this?
Yeah, last year we had what was called the Don't Say Gay Bill, as well as the Stop Woke Act, which really was an infringement. Both of those pieces of legislation last year were very vague in how they were written, but used to really stymie the education of our students, to silence the voice of teachers and staff in our schools. And that has now been extended to the college and university level, really putting a limitation on what colleges could offer students as courses. So, for example, they're not allowed to do what they call DEI in our colleges and universities, diversity, equity, and inclusion. And so, again, just limiting what kids can learn. And it's really scary in a lot of from a lot of standpoints. I mean, of course, when you start saying you can't teach a full and complete and honest history, we should be concerned. When you start saying it's not okay for kids to feel safe and welcomed in a classroom or a school building or on a college or university campus, we should be concerned, because these were the tactics that were used in Nazi Germany, not in the United States of America, yet we're seeing it happen here in the United States of America, here in Florida.
So what are the parents and the general populace saying about what's going on in the state of Florida? Because this is getting national attention. There's got to be some pushback on all this, right?
Yeah, there is pushback, and it's growing, and it's certainly certainly happening in a lot of districts across the state. Hernando County, which is just north of Tampa, that county last week had a school board meeting where they had hundreds of parents and teachers and staff and administrators and others show up to push back against a school board member who's been going into classrooms, finding problems in the classroom and reporting teachers to the Department of Education. And that's where the story came out of, with the teacher who showed a Disney video. And so therefore this Disney video, somehow this school board member thought was way inappropriate for her to be showing it to kids. It was a movie about saving the environment. It did have a gay character in it, and that's what this school board member was objecting to, but that was not part of the overall story here. And they had just completed a unit on the environment, and they were doing testing, and very often when there's a lot of state testing going on, kids get some downtime, and it's often done by showing videos. The teacher had permission from all the parents. The school board member didn't care and went after this teacher. And what they've seen in Hernando County is, not only are they seeing teachers, administrators, and parents push back, but they're also seeing a massive exodus from the schools of teachers and staff who are saying, we're done. We're going to go somewhere where we're respected, and we're not respected here. And so I think that's why the community is starting to say, wait, this is not okay. this idea of going after and vilifying teachers and staff who work in our schools and limiting what kids have access to for their education is not okay. And we saw parents really push back. That school board meeting actually went till 2:30 in the morning, where hundreds of parents and students, incredible speeches by students who spoke and comments by students who spoke at that school board meeting.
And they saved the superintendent's job as a result of that? Is that what I'm hearing?
They did. Yes, that's correct. There was an attempt by that one school board member and another school board member to try and do a vote of no confidence to lead to the termination of that superintendent, and that failed. And I'll tell you, in Florida, we have 67 school districts. And over 90% of the superintendents in the state of Florida have changed in the last, I think, 5 years here in the state of Florida, but especially in the last 2 years, have changed or in the process of changing. And that says something when you have that many superintendents turning over in at one time in the state of Florida. And it's because, you know, even superintendents, and we're often at odds with them, but even superintendents right now are feeling all kinds of political pressure, regardless of what political party they are, and just because they're a superintendent. The Department of Education has made it clear if superintendents don't do exactly what the governor wants, they go after you. They take you out. They threaten you. They do everything they can to remove you because it's either the governor's way or the highway.
And it goes beyond that, Andrew. Can a teacher be fined if they're using, like, the wrong book in the classroom? Doesn't the law say something like that?
Teachers can actually be charged, or specifically media specialists can be charged with a felony if they have books in the classroom that are deemed inappropriate for students. And you'll hear lots of stories of people saying, we want to take books out of the classroom that are teaching kids about sex and that are teaching kids to be gay and stuff like that. But they can't really find examples. And when they find examples, it's like examples that are used in health class, where we often teach about reproduction and gender and so on. And so it's very interesting that's what we're seeing happening. But you see a lot of people repeat this notion that there's something nefarious happening in schools, but they can't back it up. There was this story a couple of weeks ago out of Miami where the poem by Amanda Gorman was pulled out of an elementary school in Miami because they said a parent complained about it being inappropriate and indoctrinating students. The poem by Amanda Gorman was, of course, the one she recited at the inauguration of President Biden. And so this poem was removed out of it because of one parent complaint. Now, if you look at the parent complaint form, first of all, the parent had the wrong author. She didn't say Amanda Gorman. She thought it was by Oprah Winfrey. She asked for the book, The Hill We Climb is what it's titled, to be removed from the classroom. And she answered all of the questions, quite honestly, incorrectly. It was astonishing in some respects that even the district entertained this because it was so incomplete, so off base. And she cited two pages in particular that she said were teaching kids to hate and to indoctrinate. And if you read those two pages, which is page 12 and 13 of that book, they're nothing about that. They're inspirational. They're talking about hope. So it was very interesting, to say the least. But this parent then, it turns out, has asked for a few other books to be banned. And she acknowledged that she did not read any of them in their entirety. And she also acknowledged she doesn't like reading. And she also was found to have put an anti-Semitic post on her social media page, and when questioned about that, she said, well, it talked about communism and she really didn't read it, so she just put it out there. So that's the kind of person that's demanding books be removed from the classroom. And we see that over and over again. People who aren't reading the books, who don't understand the context in which the books are being used, and who themselves portray and push out hate and divisiveness rather than community and coming together.
In that case that you just described, that was just one parent, a mom who was not elected. This was not a school board member, right?
Correct. This was just a parent. I shouldn't say just, but this was a parent in the public schools in Miami who had a child in a school where this book was available in the media center, and she thought should not be available in the media center. And you know what a lot of these folks who are doing this, many of them aren't even parents, but there are some parents, what a lot of them are doing is they're getting the list off of a website somewhere, and then they're saying, we don't want, they're looking to see if those books are in the schools, and then they're saying, I want this book removed, and they've never read it. They don't know what the context is. They have no understanding of why they're asking for it to be removed, and you can see that in these forms that they fill out, and it's just because someone has said these books should be removed.
The crazy thing about this, you got one person here, and there may be two or three more, but it's, and I've said this, Andrew, on the show so many times, you got a minority that's affecting the majority. And that's the thing that's scary. Now, I'm asking you here, maybe we could speculate. Is this because of the media landscape today with social media that something like this, as outrageous as it is, gets amplified to the point that it's causing, you know, unrest in the schools or taking books away? Is that what's going on right now, in your opinion?
To some extent, I think that's true, but I think even more so has been this idea that those who spew hatred, those who try to vilify others, those who try to undermine our democratic way of life, those individuals have just gotten very, very loud. And those of us who disagree have not been as loud. But we're starting to see that happen. I pointed out Hernando. Sarasota County is another place where parents have really risen up and pushed back against this radical agenda that's meant to limit the education of students and, quite honestly, limit parent rights. I mean, let's be clear, everything we just talked about. When a single parent can decide a book is not appropriate for your kid over whatever you might think, that's not parent rights, right? That's the opposite. That's the antithesis to parent rights. In Florida, we've always had the right as parents, and I'm a parent. My daughter, my youngest, is about to go into high school next year. And so as a parent, you've always had the right in Florida. If you don't agree with a book that's being used, if you don't agree with an assignment that's being assigned, you can ask for an alternative assignment for your child and get it. You can never be required to have your child read a book you think is inappropriate for your child. So you've always had that right. That's true parent rights. This notion that you now get to say, I don't want my kid reading it, and I don't want your kid reading it. I don't care what you think. That's not parent rights at all.
Andrew Spahr joining us on our live line today. He's president of the Florida Education Association. Website is feaweb.org, feaweb.org. Well, there's a whole lot more to talk about. The attacks on unions, we'll get into that. Later in the show, we're going to go to Madison, Wisconsin, and check in with the Office of Professional Employees, International Local 39. Back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
Hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland at 216-881-1802. Call Music Talent of Cleveland as your dependable source for professional musicians in Northeast Ohio. Union musicians add harmony to weddings, elegance to parties, and uplifting music for all events. Music Talent of Cleveland contracts solo and ensemble musicians as well as bands and orchestras for single engagements. So hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland today. 216-881-1802.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at boydwatterson.com.
America's Workforce is presented by the Laborers International Union of North America. Feel the power right now at liuna.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, you can check us out on at least six platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis and give us a rating. We always appreciate those five-star ratings, so please keep them coming. Let's go back to the state of Florida and rejoin Andrew Spahr, president of the Florida Education Association. Their website, feaweb.org. All right, we talked about the book banning, everything that's going on. Now the attacks on, well, two things. Disney. I never thought I'd see a Republican attack a giant corporation. They're usually in bed with corporations because that's where their money comes from. But you got Disney going on, and then you've got the unions that are under attack. Andrew, fill me in on what's going on down there.
So I think you have to start with the fact that we have a governor who's an anarchist, and he does not agree with having anyone speak against what he wants to do, anybody. And if you do, he goes after you. And that's what's happening right now. There's a lot of similarities between what's happening to Disney and what's happening to unions in the state of Florida. We are two entities that speak up. We are two entities that have no problem saying what our thoughts and opinions are. And the governor doesn't like that. And because of that, he goes after him. And so he's going after Disney right now because they had the audacity to make a statement about legislation they disagreed with and said they're going to work to change that legislation, which was the Don't Say Gay bill, that they would work to change that legislation. And because they spoke up, the governor has gone after them, and he continues to go after them to a point where he's disbanded their form of government, Disney. There are several other. They had what was called a special taxing district. There were other entities that did as well and still do in the state of Florida, just not Disney. And that special taxing district allowed Disney to essentially make decisions about the land immediately around Disney and the land that Disney owned as it comes to building and development. And of course, you know, Disney has those high standards. They want a certain expectation met. So he disbanded them, and then they created a board, not elected, but appointed by the governor to oversee now this land that Disney owns. So it's kind of crazy. And of course, Disney has filed a lawsuit as they continue to try to limit what Disney can do here. And it's already cost the citizens of the state of Florida. Disney was going to spend $10 billion over the next 20 years here in the state of Florida, and they are now reconsidering it and already canceled a $1 billion project that was supposed to start this year. They've canceled that project because of what is going on right now in their battle with the governor. So it is costing Florida taxpayers. It is costing the business community in Florida. And it's crazy because it really is this issue of a governor who's saying, if you go against me, I'm going to come after you. This is a guy who's running for president, right? That's the mentality he has. This is not what we need in this country, let alone this state. So that is the challenge. And then, of course, in the actions against us, because teachers and staff organize in the state of Florida, we are a right to work for less state. So people don't have to belong to the union in the state of Florida. And over 50% choose to be members of their union. But he's coming after us as well for that same reason, because we speak up, because we talk about how some of the stuff he's doing isn't good for kids. It's not good for families. It's not good for our communities. And it's not good for the profession, which has seen the worst teacher and staff shortage ever under this governor. In fact, average teacher pay in the state of Florida when the governor took over was 47th in the nation. Today it's 48th in the nation. And this is a governor who tries to say he's helping teachers out. He's not. They're leaving at record paces because of the policies of this governor. And for speaking out, he's now trying to take away their right to come together in a union and advocate for their profession and for the students we serve.
Andrew, can you be specific on what he's doing to the unions, the public sector unions, with the exception of police and fire? This is kind of similar to what Scott Walker did in Wisconsin back in 2011 when he attacked public sector workers, but he made some exclusions. What's the reasoning on that one? Do you know?
Yeah, they never gave a good reason. It's interesting. We have a Republican-controlled legislature in the state of Florida. They have a supermajority. But we've been working with Republicans trying to build relationships and really move our agenda over the last 5 years. And it was interesting during this session because there was not a single lawmaker, Republican or Democrat, who spoke in favor of this legislation targeting unions. Like you said, it does not include police or fire or corrections officers or probation officers, for that matter. And they never did give a reason why they were not included, even though that question was asked multiple times. And on top of that, it's important to know that when the governor spoke about this legislation, the only target he had was the teachers' unions in the state of Florida. You know, we believe his lawyers told him if the only one you targeted was the teachers' union, you would lose. So don't just target the teachers' unions. And that's why we think all other public sector unions were included. Know that in Florida, we have the right to collectively bargain in our Constitution. It is a constitutional right for public employees in the state of Florida to come together in a union to decide whether or not to join a union and to collectively bargain through that union, which may not be denied or abridged, which is part of where we're going in terms of legal action, because what the governor is doing right now is abridging that right. So what does this law require? Well, first of all, it bans our ability to collect dues through paychecks, which is typically how unions collect dues. It is the safest, easiest, most convenient way for members to join their union. He's taking that right away. Second of all, he's saying that all unions, public employee unions, in order to stay in existence in the state of Florida, must have at least 60% membership in that union of the bargaining unit. Again, it's an arbitrary number. It was 50% for teachers only. They've now, and of course, what he did, and we know this because we've got it reported back to us, he literally went around the state to see where all the teachers' unions were. And when he saw we were all at 50% or higher, he decided to raise it to 60%. And when we achieve 60%, I'm sure he'll raise it to 70%. You know, that's the game here, is to make it impossible to have a union, which leads to the third thing. He's requiring a certified audit by a certified public accountant from Florida every year for every union, regardless of the size of the union. Now, that's interesting because we have some unions who have revenue of $1,000, $2,000, $5,000. They're small, rural, local unions. They now have to pay $8,000, $10,000, $12,000, $15,000 a year for an audit. They don't even have that kind of revenue. It's not even financially possible, which again seems to deny the right of those employees to have a union and to come together in a union. So, you know, what I'm talking about is some of the legal aspects of how we're challenging some of this. And then the last thing it does is it allows the state to investigate unions, to look at membership roles of the unions, to create a membership application created. This is what's crazy. I mean, think about this. The state of Florida is creating a membership application to join your union, and members will have to fill out the state's approved membership application, which they just created a draft of. It's 2 pages of directions for a 1-page form. And if you do not fill it out exactly as the state tells you to fill it out, they will not consider you a union member. Think about that. The government telling you how you join your union, and they will decide whether or not you did it correctly to determine whether or not you're a union member. If that is not government interference, with the operation of a private entity, a union, and an infringement on the rights of the citizens of the state of Florida to join a union, I don't know what is.
So, Andrew, what are your members saying about all this? I mean, this is not a double whammy. This is a triple or quadruple whammy on unions down there.
Yeah, this is an attempt to completely take us out. So let's talk about what we've been doing. We've been out talking to our members, organizing our members. I have, since session ended a month ago, I have spent week after week, day after day, as well as our staff and our leaders in local unions, working side by side with our local unions who have done an amazing job. We will hit 50% of our membership moving over to an alternative way of collecting dues. And the governor signed this bill less than a month ago, right? So in less than a month, we've been able to get our members to shift over to another way of collecting dues. 50% of our members so far, we will get the rest of them. We are moving as quickly as possible. Never been done at that rate of speed. Second of all, in the last month, we have had 8,000 new members join our unions in the state of Florida. And right now our focus is moving our current members over to this other way of paying. But the bargaining units in the state, and this is just the education sector, but the teachers unions in the state of Florida, teachers and staff and professors, are realizing the dangerous situation we are being placed in. And they are joining their union left and right because they understand the importance of having a voice and having that protection that you need in a profession to ensure that your contract continues. So people are joining in record numbers. And so those are amazing things that we're seeing happen, the amazing work going on in our local unions all over the state. And we have 98 local unions in the state of Florida. So just seeing that kind of work is truly amazing. And then we're, of course, looking at the legal aspect of it. We have a case we've already filed in federal court. We're working on some state challenges as well. The federal challenge is showing that they are literally violating our rights under the First and 14th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. The so-called constitutionalists who continue to ignore the Constitution at the state and national level, we are challenging it in the court, and we are feeling very optimistic. So that we have a preliminary injunction that we've already asked for, an emergency injunction, and that is going to be heard before the court on June 23rd. This bill goes into effect, part of it on July 1 and part of it on October 1. And so we are working really hard to take all legal recourse we can to stop the infringement on the rights of teachers, staff, and professors, and other public employees in the state of Florida.
Clearly an overreach here, clearly on that. Well, good luck to you on that court case. But in the meantime, I mean, you mentioned how teachers are leaving the profession, and I can't blame them for what you just described. I mean, there's only so much you can take and say, hey, look, I'm out of here. Now, where are you with the teacher shortage? I remember the last time talking to you, it was pretty critical. It sounds like it might be getting worse down there. Is that what's going on?
It is definitely getting worse. I mentioned Hernando County on the day of that school board meeting last week. There were over 30 teachers who turned in their resignation that same day. And Hernando County is a pretty small county. It's not a big county by any stretch of the imagination. So when you have 30 people turn in resignations on one day, that's significant. It was more than double all the resignations they had last summer in that district. That's pretty telling as to what's happening in the state of Florida. You know, I always look at it this way. There's two folks, if you will, two mindsets with people who work in our schools. One is, I'm going to stay and try to make it right, and I'm going to speak up and I'm going to stand up because our kids deserve that, and our profession deserves that, and we need to stay. And there's the others who say, you know what, I can't take it anymore. I can't teach under these conditions. It's not right. It's harming kids, and I'm not going to be part of it, and they leave. And I think that's what you're seeing right now in Florida. Those who are saying, this is not right. This is bad for kids. This is harming our communities. I am not going to be part of it, and they're leaving. And you have the others saying, you're right. This is not right. It's harming our kids. It's harming our communities, and I'm going to stay here and I'm going to fight. And that's what we're starting to see as I talk to young people, trying to encourage them to go into teaching, because fewer and fewer young people are going into teaching. One of the things I talk about is I want you to come into the teaching profession, not just to teach, not just to make a difference in the lives of kids. I want you to come into the teaching profession to be an advocate, because that's what we need now. We need teachers and we need advocates. We need people who will stand up for the kids, for our families, for our communities, because that's what it takes today to make sure that we are giving kids everything they need. You know, we talk a lot about parent rights and teacher and staff rights. Let's not forget about students' rights. It is the Florida Constitution that guarantees students the right to a high-quality, free, uniform system of public education. That is what is under attack in Florida. That is what we as unions are fighting for. We are fighting as unions for the right and the voice of workers in the state of Florida to stand together, to stand united, and to make sure that no one loses their constitutional rights, their human rights, their civil rights in working in a place where they are valued and respected for who they are.
Amen, brother. The Florida Education Association is lucky to have you. You are a fighter, no doubt about that. All I can say is hang in there. Please stay in touch. You got a friend here in America's Workforce. We got a lot of people that listen to this podcast. We're heard in 49 out of 50 states, 11 countries right now. Canada is a big one right now. 9 of the 12 provinces are listening to America's Workforce. So stay in touch with us and stay strong, okay, brother?
Will do, Flash. Thanks for having me. Have a great day.
Andrew Spahr, president of the Florida Education Association. That website, feaweb.org. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Local 39 of the Office of Professional Employees International.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as healthcare and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Steelworkers. You can find more at usw.org.
You'd like to upgrade your fund's vision care, but you need to roll back the clock on the cost. Roll it back to the 70s. iMed offers members 76% average savings versus retail on eye exams, glasses, and contacts. Enjoy similar benefits to an indemnity plan, but with consistent savings and a better experience. Endorsed by the National Labor Alliance, iMed takes a consultative approach to tailor your vision insurance benefits. Learn more at iMed.com/union. Figures based on client data. Visit iMed.com/union for more details.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Heat and Frost Insulators Labor Management Cooperative Trust. Find out more at insulators.org/LMCT.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Ironworkers. You can find more at ironworkers.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. Real simple, AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency. You could find more at ulagency.org. Let's go to Madison, Wisconsin for our second guest, and that would be Catherine Bartlett Mulvahill, and she is president of the Office of Professional Employees International Union Local 39. They have about 3,000 members. She's here to talk about the union, her background, and a job action against a big company up there. Catherine, welcome to America's Workforce. And I always ask our new guests on the show, and we do have many, how they got involved in their union. A lot of times there's a family member. Can you tell me your story and share that with our listeners? Go ahead.
Sure. So I got involved in the union when I first moved to Wisconsin. So the employer that I went to go work for was formerly known as CUNA Mutual Group, which has just recently rebranded itself to a new name called True Stage. And when I moved to Wisconsin, I had been laid off from an employer in Iowa, and I was bound and determined not to have that happen again. Being laid off was a fairly devastating process for myself and my husband. So we decided to leave Iowa. That's where I was living and working. And we picked Madison, Wisconsin, really just kind of, you know, let's just go someplace that we think is a good place to live. And when I got here, though, I started hearing a lot about CUNA Mutual Group, what kind of employer it was. But most of all, something that was new to me was that it was a workforce of office employees that were actually part of a union. I had never heard of that kind before. I'd never heard of what was kind of known as a white-collar union. Mm-hmm. And that was in 1998. And within about a year and a half, I ran for, you know, steward election and won. And that was the beginning. So before I ever got there, I remember when I was talking to my dad, who was in labor on the management side all of his career. And I told him about OPIU at CUNA Mutual Group. And he was like, huh, I didn't know there were white collar unions either. But he was like, go for it. You should run. It's the best thing I have of my job is bargaining with unions. He really liked it. His long career was bargaining with more of industrial type unions, USWs, UAWs, and the like. And that was his favorite part of the job, the bargaining, but really just he had lifelong friendships with union leaders. So he enjoyed his work. He liked unions, which is probably, he's probably one of the very few on the management side who did and respected them and really tried to create places at the companies he worked for that were, you know, fair and mm-hmm. honest and not where a lot of the unions, or let me just rephrase that, not where management groups are now, where it's really about, it feels like most of the time trying to bust unions at every chance they get. That was not the world my father came from. He had nothing but positive interactions. Bargaining, of course, is hard, and you don't get everything you want, for sure, but nothing but respect. So he was like, go for it. You should do it. They give you protections you wouldn't get anyplace else, and that was the beginning. So
there you go. And you've been business manager and president for, almost 13 years now then, right?
Yeah, so I was... I ran for a steward election at CUNA Mutual Group. I was the chief steward for 10 years there and then moved into being president business manager at the local since 2010. Right.
You know, it's interesting, the makeup of OPEIU, because you're a mm-hmm. union that represents a number of unions. I see there's like 28 units. I'm looking at IBEW yeah. Local 965. There's the Ironworkers Local 383.
Yeah.
The machinists. So what we're talking about, you got the unions, but you got obviously people that work in the office, and that's where you come in. So I get that. That's
correct.
Pretty cool. So, Catherine, talk to me about this job action going on now with, I guess it's formerly Community Mutual. There was a name change here, and apparently, I guess they're not too happy with what's going on with the union. Can you explain what's at work right now?
Yeah, so it's CUNA Mutual Financial Group. That's their former name. They just rebranded themselves to a new name called True Stage. And so our unit there of 450 employees went on strike on May 19th. It's the first time in their almost 80-year history. And they have been on strike for the last 2 weeks. And it's been difficult. We've been in bargaining for the past almost 15 months. We're the employer. We have almost 9 ULP charges. Our chief steward was fired for his union activity, and the employer is running a very anti-union campaign against our members. And our members, you know, have had enough, as most strikes are based on that. But it's really about trying to stop the employer from the lack of job security, taking away pension and health care plans, not giving wage proposals that don't keep up with inflation, much less progress employees this through their regular pay scales. There's lots of pay equity issues, discrimination issues at that employer. And so the members, you know, have come to a place where enough is enough. And this is a workforce that has members who went on strike. This is how diverse the group is. We've got some members who had just started working for the employer in the last 2 weeks, to others who've been there for almost 50 years. And so can you imagine just starting with an employer and then voting to elect to go on strike and you just walked in the door? So they new employees to the longest term employees understand what's at stake here. And it's a big deal for those employees to actually say, yeah, I'm with you. I'm going to go ahead and put my career on hold to do that. They've never done that in all these years. And that is because the employer has taken, you know, a much stronger, forceful stance against them than ever before. And this is all under the current CEO, Bob Trunzo, and the executive board. They have not been, let's just say, employee-focused in a really, really long time. Yet they tout that with their DEI initiatives. But, you know, it turns out what looks like their DEI is more about pushing that kind of program onto their customers, right? They developed it, claimed it, that it was in place at their own work site, but yet actually sell it as a product now to their customers. So, yeah, it's been a struggle. And like I said, it's been a turning point for the employees, but they're stronger than ever. They're more unified than ever. So we'll see. You know, we'll see if we get some more progress at the table because of it.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you, what's the next bargaining session look like, in your opinion?
Well, we meet tomorrow if the employer doesn't cancel again. So what has happened is that we stopped, bargaining actually came to a halt in the middle of January. They started saying, well, we're not going to meet with you unless you agree to these certain things. They cut off all bargaining pay for the stewards because we used to bargain during the day. And they said, well, we're just not willing to do that anymore. They wanted to meet in person after bargaining for 13 months, all virtual, right? Because we started at the tail end of COVID. And so we had been bargaining with other employers, you know, via Zoom, because that's what one had to do to get contracts done. And this employer agreed to the same. So they went very aggressive, and I think they went aggressive because the members were standing up to them and not willing to just take whatever deal they were throwing at them.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, so it was trying to, you know, put hardships on the bargaining team, delay bargaining. And at that point, once they started to refuse, that was the first ULP, right? Because they weren't bargaining in good faith. They were doing mostly surface bargaining at best. And there we stalled. And more things came out, more ULPs came after that, and they went after the chief steward. So, yeah, it's been the challenge for sure.
Yeah, they're playing hardball. And you mentioned 9 unfair labor practice charges. That's a lot.
I think we're up to 9. Yeah, I think, yeah. You know, even while on strike, right, the employer was committing more violations, right? They had their security, this out-of-state hired security firm there, out there filming, you know, surveilling our members. Didn't hide from it. So that was, you know, another ULP. So these tactics they take, and yet they continue to tout, well, look, this is what we're here for. We want to make sure we get a good contract for our employees too. But their tactics say something completely different.
Far from it, yeah. All right, Catherine, what's the best website to go to get more information on this?
So our home website is opeiu39.org. And so we have an entire web page on our website devoted to CUNY Mutual United, which is the unit there at OPIU, at CUNY Mutual Group.
OPEIU39.org. Did I hear that correctly?
Correct.
Well, Catherine, all I can say, hang in there. You got a heck of a struggle going on, but just stay strong. And obviously, there's a lot of solidarity in your local. So keep up the fight, okay?
All right. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right. That'll be it for another edition of America's Workforce. Tomorrow, we check in with the Ohio AFL-CIO and the Teamsters Local 332 out of Michigan. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.